Hi, kids. Do you like violence? Yes.
Are you sick to death of pussyfooting around the truth while being constantly fed lies by news and big tech tyrants? If so, then come join me, Dan Smotz, on The System Is Down, where we get weird, have fun, and dig into all the dangerous taboo topics like conspiracies, politics, religion, culture, current events, and everything your family just prays you don't bring up around the Thanksgiving dinner table. And I know that reality is scary to some people, so if you're easily offended, just ignore this and go back to making cat memes or whatever. But if you're ready to change the world for the better, come join me on The System Is Down at tsidpod.com or wherever you get podcasts. That's tsidpod.com, because the system is down and truth is taking over.
Ladies and gentlemen, you are now entering the Second Freak Comics podcast, starring Mark Clare and Rimzo Martinez.
In brightest day, in blackest night, no evil shall escape my sight. But those who worship evil's might, beware my power, Green Lantern's light. And let me tell you, I say it as a 26-year-old man, and I still get excited whenever I get to read the Green Lantern Oath on paper. Something about it just reaches out to me. And that is what we're covering today, but with a twist. Welcome back to the Second Print Comics. Today we're covering Green Lantern Earth 1, Volume 1. But we can't go on this journey alone. No, the quest needs a team, and like all teams, we need the wise old sage. We've got once again Mr. Mark Clare joining us as always. Mark, how's life?
Remzo, it's great to be here. What would you say I am, in an analogy to this week's episode? Am I like the Kilowog to your Hal Jordan or what?
I think that's...
Not the Carol Ferris.
That would be really weird. A Kilowog figure, someone who's on the journey but is a few miles ahead of Hal, where we find him. Mark, before we go ahead and get going, we've got some house notes. We've been doing these giveaways here and there every so often, and to great success, we have been able to pull them off. What was the first one? Was the first one we did, it was when we started all the way back in episode one. That was with the Jim Lee X-Men issue ones.
Yeah, exactly. That's when you had the stash of those X-Men number one. Somehow, I don't know how you found a whole bunch of one of the most valuable comics of all time, but you were able to do it, and we were able to provide those to some of our great listeners.
Right, as priceless as Weimar Republic dollars. We found a bunch of those, and we gave those at the time just for reviews on iTunes when we were just starting off, and those went away in like a week. Then, I think it was like 4 or 5 months ago, I found a whole bunch of X-Force issue one copies. These, you know, we're seeing a trend here with the X's and the overprinting, and we went ahead and said, hey, new patrons at any level, go ahead and sign up and I'll mail these copies to you. Well, you know, we've been very, very lucky, very blessed, and because I'm so proud of our success and you are too, I went ahead and I went over to my local comic book shop and I'm like, how do we really treat people and show our appreciation? So what we're doing right now is we're doing another giveaway, but this is more than just a comic. This time we're giving out two prize sets for the first two new patrons we get at any level, plus a 5-star review on any podcast app of your choice. So it's an honest review, plus join us at any level. What we're doing is we're giving out a copy of Immortal Hulk Volume 1, plus Transformers Universe Issue 1. And then we've got the other set, wow, which is, and I mean, folks, we're too kind to you, just too kind. We've got Deadpool versus Old Man Logan, plus a copy of issue one, The Deadly Foes of Spider-Man. Join up, sign up, go ahead and leave us a review, and you'll get one graphic novel and one comic. It can't get better than that. I don't know many shows like ours that go ahead and do giveaways like this just because we freaking love people.
That makes me want to sign up and leave a review.
It'd be kind of awkward Patreon if you did that.
But that's just, that's going too far.
That's like the Inception joining. It just, it counts, but does it?
Yeah, and I see no reason to send myself as little as $5 a month to access all the content that I create. That seems like an odd path. So I won't take that path, but we encourage you all to take that path. If you've been a fan of the show, if you like what we're doing, less than a Starbucks. Less than, well, it depends on what you get. If you get a fancy latte, it's less. If you get just a regular coffee, it's just slightly more. But either way, for damn near close to a Starbucks a month, you can access all of our exclusive bonus audio content, and there is a plethora of it. We have Remzo Rants Weekly, as well as Remzo versus the MCU. Those are the regularly scheduled shows, and then I am the one who handles the very irregular shows with Claire Continues and the Random Marvel Comics podcast, as well as upcoming soon. And we just finished the WandaVision recaps with our friend Dan Smotz of The System Is Down, but we are also going to be doing Falcon and Winter Soldier recaps.
Hell yeah!
Exactly. How, I don't know. How we'll find the time, I don't know, but we're going to be watching it anyway, so I may as well tell you lovely people about our thoughts on it as well. So tons and tons and tons of exclusive content for somewhere around a Starbucks a month. Find it all at patreon.com/secondprint.
And besides, I mean, if you want to get real crazy here, we've got an upcoming Journey into Mystery call where folks can go ahead and chat with Mark and I, pick our brains, get sneak previews of what's coming on, or just tell us how we're right or wrong about so many things that we've gone ahead and spewed out over the months. And, you know, the other thing, Mark, I love, you know, Christmas is my favorite holiday, but with this show, with the, everything we're doing, it's like Christmas every month. We're mailing out hardcover graphic novels, like on a pretty regular basis now, at least once or twice a month. We're having to go ahead and run over to our local shops and go ahead and then run to the post office and mail these out to people. It adds a little bit of time to our day, but it is one of the coolest perks that we've got on here. And the collections that people are now building up, especially for those first time folks that were like, I'm gonna let Mark and Remso take the wheel and go ahead and build up my graphic novel collection. People are getting freaking excited about this, and they're loving what we're sending out. So please, folks, from the bare basic to the bare awesome, we got you covered. So might as well take advantage of getting a jump start on your stuff today with this new graphic novel comic giveaway we're doing. Go ahead and jump in, because we've only got two.
Indeed. What better way, especially for new fans out there that are just starting to build up their collections, what better way to do so than to let us build it for you? It's one of the most fun things I get to do for our Patreon. Like, I love recording the bonus shows. I love all this extra stuff that I read to do those shows. But there's really no true joy like that of getting to personally pick out a graphic novel for somebody else. The hardest part of that is not ripping it open myself and digging into it myself. I have to really resist, especially because we're buying the real hardcover. So most of these are coming, you know, plastic sealed and everything. So you know we didn't dive in and get our greasy mitts on them.
You get the virgin reading.
Indeed.
So that's about it. Anything else?
No, I think we can head right into things now.
All right, perfect. Today we're covering Green Lantern Earth 1, Volume 1. Recently, what we've been doing is we've been talking more about, you know, the what-if stories, the Elseworld stories, stories on Infinite Earths, parallel realities, and much like 2 weeks ago, we went ahead and covered Ultimate Spider-Man before that. A while back, we had done Ultimate X-Men. So now I think if you're a new listener, you'll be fine. But if you're an old listener who's just now getting into all of these new theories and types of stories and everything else, you should be a little bit accustomed to this idea of retcons, parallel worlds, alternate timelines, everything from Flashpoint to Deadpool Noir. We've kind of balanced things out. And this is another version of that. The Earth One series is an original graphic novel series that came out, I think it started in 2009, 2010, way, way, way back when I was, you know, just a youngin' in high school. And the idea of this was to create original stories, self-contained stories that took place in a more realistic world. Some would say a more cinematic world because of how things translate on screen. What they wanted to do is they wanted to say, if these heroes existed in our Earth, what would they actually be like? Would they be all heroic? Would they be all powerful? What does the damage look like from all those super battles? All those questions are asked. And what we've seen is we've seen Earth One Superman, Batman, Teen Titans, Wonder Woman, and perhaps my favorite of this entire lineup, Green Lantern, because what they basically try and do is reintroduce classic fabled characters into a modern contemporary environment, much like what the Ultimate Universe did. Now, Mark and I have some different opinions on the Ultimate Universe, but before we jump into this, Mark, two questions. One, what was your familiarity of Green Lantern coming into this? And secondly, when you look at the idea of, oh, wow, there's another universe, there's a whole other thing basically showing me what I've kind of seen before-ish. What was your mindset going into it?
How much time do you have? This could be a couple podcasts in and of itself. But as far as Green Lantern, when I got into comics in the 90s, Hal Jordan was not the Green Lantern. He was actually a villain when I first started getting into comics. This was kind of during the Parallax phase. And the Green Lanterns at the time were, yes, actually, I think he had the yellow ring and may have been Warrior or something like that at the time. But there was, of course, my good friend,
He still had a bowl cut.
The bowl-cutted man himself, Guy Gardner. And also, this is when Kyle Rayner, who we just discussed on last week's episode in the Justice League, he was really coming into his own as the current Green Lantern at that time. So in terms of Green Lantern, Hal Jordan, growing up, I wasn't exposed to a whole lot other than when I would go back and read, you know, older DC stuff or read Crisis on Infinite Earths, that sort of thing. When I did get back into comics, maybe 7 or 8 years ago, I did dive into a lot of the Geoff Johns Green Lantern stuff that has come out since that time. So I read, you know, when Hal Jordan returns and a lot of that series beyond that. I read some of Geoff Johns' New 52 Green Lantern. So I read a lot of the major stories since then, you know, Blackest Night, Brightest Day, all of that stuff. So I think over the last few years, I've become fairly familiar with at least the modern Green Lantern lore, largely as it's been portrayed by Geoff Johns.
Same basically goes for me. I started coming in around Green Lantern Rebirth, and then there was his Green Lantern series, and then
I think I call Rebirth. It Reborn. I'm getting my wires crossed.
It's all the same thing. It's like Heroes Reborn and the New Heroes Reborn, which I will not be reading, but that's neither here nor there. When it comes to Green Lantern, what really intrigued me about this hero is that he kind of combined what some would consider like the magical elements with the more space age elements. So he was a hero that was in space, but there's a lot of mythology and lore and, you know, crazy mystical stuff that goes on with who the Green Lanterns are. What always also really surprised me was growing up, my Green Lantern was Jon Stewart, primarily because I was a product of the Justice League animated series. So, you know, this idea of many people not only having the mantle of Green Lantern, but there being a bunch of people who are Green Lantern, it's different. Because there's a Green Lantern for everyone, and they all serve a very distinct purpose. They, you know, especially the Green Lanterns from Earth, because they could not be more staunchly different from each other, personality-wise and background-wise. And then when you get into the Green Lanterns from other Earths, it creates a different feeling, because it's not like when, you know, a hero dies or a hero quits and somebody else takes his place. It's these guys all have their own adventures and their own challenges, and there's always so much going on. And even when they do team up and do stuff, it's almost like you're dealing with two very different heroes, despite having the same names, despite having the same powers, despite being part of the same core. Green Lantern was really one of those stories where it's like, yeah, we can have like a collective identity, but there's going to be an adventure and a challenge and bad guys and, you know, awesome planets galore for everybody.
Yeah, I'd say the Green Lanterns, like you've touched on here, it's one of those mantle roles that can get passed from person to person. But for whatever reason, the particular mantle of Green Lantern, despite the fact that it, you know, changes who's holding it, or sometimes like there's like four or five people all from Earth holding a type of lantern for some reason, or a type of ring, even if they have to kind of finagle what those are or why they all get them at once. But they've always been able to keep all these lanterns to have very distinct personalities. I mean, to the point that you couldn't even call, like you said, you couldn't even call them the same hero. They just happen to share a ring and the powers, and that's about it. Personality wise, they've all always been very, very distinct from one another, which is really impressive, especially across decades and writers and that sort of thing. So that's a really unique thing in comics, to be able to have such unique voices carried over through several decades.
Definitely. And apart from just the different lanterns, the thing that was always, you know, kind of funny in a way, you know, as somebody that is a giant collector, especially of different eras, the Bronze Age, Golden Age, Silver Age, I usually always say that the original versions of these characters are the best, but I think we covered it last week in the Justice League of America episode. You and I both agree that in terms of Green Lantern specifically, Hal Jordan's not our favorite. We don't hate him. He's just not our favorite.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, for me, I learning about Hal Jordan has just been an exercise in looking into the past for me. Because like I said, the only Hal Jordan I grew up with was this crazy Parallax who lost his mind and destroyed his home city and was a weird time traveling villain in a what was it? Crisis in Time? Zero Hour.
Zero Hour. Yeah.
Yes. That is on our on our list. We're gonna have to huddle at some point. We've been discussing how to handle all the crisis events on this show because we want to cover them. But I don't know. I think
alone is a crisis itself.
That is its own crisis indeed. But because I kind of feel like before we actually dive into any singular crisis event, we have to sort of tackle the first one. And to do that it's a huge task of undertaking. It's gonna take more than one episode to do it justice. That's just. Yeah, I'm not going to even try to pretend we could just zoom through Crisis on Infinite Earths in under 2 hours.
No, we're going to have to tag team like other people to fill in for some of us at some point. So. Because I don't know if I could do like a six-parter. We might have to have some guest hosts for that. I mean, it's going to be a lot. I'm intimidated. I'm not going to lie. I'm intimidated.
We're open to feedback on how to handle this issue. But I do think it's important to really lay out that basis before we dive into the other crisis events, because they really do play off one another when it comes to DC. Marvel's had events and crisis-esque situations, but they don't play on each other in the way that DC's crisis events really do kind of lead one into the other.
Very true, which leads me to my second question. So ironically, and I wasn't going to bring this up, but I appreciate you bringing this up, Earth One as a series actually spun out of Final Crisis.
Oh, I had no idea.
Yeah, so this is
because that was one of the remaining, like one of the 52 Earths that came out of that. Is that what it was?
Yeah. Yeah, so this is Earth One, and now if you're a current DC reader, we have like the whole thing has been redone again. Like I just picked up Crime Syndicate issue 1 and I'm like, "Oh, there's another Earth 3 and there's another one." And the order isn't the same anymore. So with that said, we've been talking about the need to go ahead and do reboots, and often when you do a reboot, you have to set it in a brand new continuity. We've covered a lot of the Marvel stuff for the Ultimate Universe, but this is DC's attempt to do that, but they did it differently.
The weirdest thing with DC is when they reboot, they can never do it all the way, ever. So that always, if you're going to either reboot or don't, either just reboot the damn thing or don't, and just let things go. But DC always tries to have their cake and eat it too. I think the most glaring example is the New 52, when they rebooted all the titles and rebooted all the continuity. Oh, except for Batman and Green Lantern. That's just going to keep going exactly where it was from. And somehow that's supposed to all make
sense. Because he's Batman.
Because Batman.
So with that said, you see this on the list, you go ahead and pull up the book, and you see it's another one of these. What were your thoughts? Like, was it, oh shit, what's with Remso and these new age millennial reboots?
No, I was actually looking forward to this one because I have never read any of the Earth One titles, and they have been relatively acclaimed. I've heard really good things about them. I just have never taken the time. I actually own a physical copy of Batman Earth One and just haven't read it yet for some reason. So again, as this show often does, it gave me the impetus to dive into an area that I might not have gotten around to diving into myself if I didn't have that impetus in front of me. So I'm grateful for that. I'm grateful that I was kind of sort of forced to actually dive in and check out this Earth One. And I don't know, for some reason, I mean, like I hadn't been exposed to Earth One itself. For some reason, I like this approach, and I can't really put my finger on why I do, but I like this approach more than I do the Marvel Ultimate Universe approach, and I can't really say why, because they are kind of the same thing. The Ultimate Universe is supposed to be sort of newer, younger versions of these characters sort of coming into their own in the modern day, and from what I can tell, Earth One seems to be newer, younger versions of these characters coming into their own in the modern day. For some reason, I like the Earth One approach. I don't like the Ultimate Universe approach. Maybe to me, I think I know what the difference is in my mind about why Ultimate Universe seems more intimidating to me, is because with the Ultimate Universe, there was a solid, you know, 15 years or so of stories and continuity. So to me, it's like it feels too much like having to dive into a full universe to get the full picture. Whereas with this Earth One stuff, I know each character just has a volume or two or three at most. So it feels a little less intimidating about being able to dive into it. So that's what it is.
And you don't have to. Yeah, I mean, you don't have to worry about crossovers either, because they specifically said that while they are open to doing, like, you know, an Earth One Justice League and stuff like that, that's going to be something they do far, far down the road. Because, like, I got this, like, 6 years ago, I think. And then Green Lantern Earth One Volume 2 came out, like, in August of 2020. So they take their time with these. And I mean, these are, you know, we'll jump into them in a minute, but these are books that they put a lot of detail into. I mean, the Superman one was what kicked it off. Then Batman came out later. The Batman Earth one has actually impacted some of the stuff in the actual comics, not in terms of story necessarily, but a lot of the elements from that, it went into the regular Batman comic. It actually influenced the writers of Gotham. And apparently, the guy who's directing, The Batman with Robert Pattinson, apparently this was one of his favorites. So, like, we're seeing these comics, they weren't just one and done, you know, forget about it. Like, they were supposed to be real clear, singular, succinct stories that they're like, you know, take 4 or 5 years if you need to. Just make sure it's good, because we gotta sell these out, because we're asking people to spend, you know, a lot of time and money on one single original graphic novel, which for original graphic novels, those are either big successes or they're big failures, because they don't do this often.
Yeah, it makes sense. And I think even just for me, like I enjoyed the Ultimate Spider-Man story, but even with that, I felt like to get the full picture, because there's a lot of seeds planted, I felt like, man, to get the full picture here, I got to go read 85 more issues or whatever it might have been. Whereas this, I read this volume and I felt like, all right, I've read this volume. I've gotten what I need to hear. If I want to read the other volume, I can go do that. But I don't feel like there's like literally like, you know, 50 hours of reading I have to do to get the full picture.
Absolutely. So without any further ado, let's go ahead and jump in to Green Lantern Earth 1. What we see at the very beginning is not our humble hero. What we see instead is that we're inside of a spacecraft somewhere off in outer space, where we don't necessarily know right now. But we see a couple of astronauts. They're in a ship, and what they have is this incoming transmission coming in from another ship, a Ferris ship. For those that are, you know a little bit about Green Lantern, you know that Ferris Industries is what does a lot of the tech in the world of DC. It also is the company that Hal Jordan works for. So we're starting to see that they're bringing in these elements very early on. And then we go on to the next page. We see this giant spaceship, something that is not anything that we have in our world. What we can tell is that, yeah, while this is based in quote reality, they're still bringing in some of those giant sci-fi elements. This giant ship called Ferris 6, which they're calling a Monarca Energy Palladium Mining ship, which is an expedition operated by Ferris Galactic. It gives me very 2001 Space Odyssey vibes. So what we can tell is that when Hal Jordan's first introduced in the original comics, it's all earthbound. The fact that we're already jumping into space wants the reader understand. If you think you knew this as a prior Green Lantern aficionado beforehand, hold on, because things are about to change drastically. And I mean, the artwork on this, when I associate my thoughts of Green Lantern, it's always very bright, crystal clear, very Star Wars-y in a sense. This is dark. The artwork is very, like I want to say, it's very punk-like. Like, it's not like a Frank Miller type of artwork, but it's not supposed to make you think, ooh, it's space. It's more like, damn, this space is actually kind of scary.
It's definitely a portrayal of like a sort of a gritty, grim portrayal of space and spaceships, as opposed to sort of, I don't know, kind of like the flashier view of space we often see in superhero comics, where everything just looks like bright and shiny and happy. But this just looks like a treacherous place to be. And I think a lot of that can sort of be credited towards the art and the art style here, which I really enjoyed throughout. Especially, I mean, I think it just felt so appropriate for the setting.
Yeah, I mean, they really want this to really get across to the reader that this is not the fantastical world of Green Lantern that you may have seen in like the Ryan Reynolds movie, really, because this actually came out a few years after that. So we have this idea of what it is, and now they're really trying to make it clear that this is going to be different. So much so, the ship goes ahead and it lands on this unclaimed asteroid, and they're calling it Asteroid 895. So, I mean, what they're trying to show you right now is that space is no longer that much of a mystery. Space is no longer that giant, uncharted thing. Space is basically commercialized. And what we see is a bunch of people. They're in these astronaut suits. We see somebody named Volkov. We see another dude named Durand. So we see a whole team of people, including someone named Jordan, which we'll get to in a second. And what happens is that captain who was on the ship earlier, she goes ahead and sends out a message saying, hey, the Finda, which is probably another ship, the Finda struck a 17-ton load on 644. So Volkov is like, what? No. And you see everyone trying to throw a fit. What we can, you know, see here is that these are contractors trying to find ore and palladium and other rare minerals, and they're all trying to outcompete each other. So when one ship gets a contract and another ship finds a whole bunch of stuff, it just messes with each other. So this is the commercialization of space in a dark Elon Musk type of way.
They're space mining mercenaries, basically.
Yeah, basically. So the fact that they're here, and you know, when I always think of space, it's like, oh, isn't this awesome? These guys are just working. They're just basically space miners, and they're just like, shit. Like this sucks. I would be thinking, wow, I'm in space. I'm doing all this cool stuff, but this is serious work. And at this point, they're trying to get everyone back onto the cruiser, because at this point, since there's no work to be done, they're just going to go ahead and be earthbound. So the captain's looking around. They're like, wait a second. I can't see everybody. Where's Jordan? Jordan, turn on your cam. So, you know, everyone is kind of excited except this Jordan guy. So, Volkov comes over. And he's looking at Jordan and he's like, well, I guess we're going back to Earth, right? And Jordan responds back to everyone and he's like, no. And, you know, Volkov looks at him and he's like, what? And he's like, I'm not going back there. And this is when we see a full, you know, our first full appearance of Jordan. He's off in the corner in a spacesuit and he's got his mining tool. And Hal Jordan, you know, from the typical comics, is a real talker. He's a confident dude. He's the ace fighter pilot turned test pilot. What we see right now is that obviously he still has some of that adventurous spirit because he's in space mining, obviously, but he looks dark. He looks like a dude that's just not very sociable at all. And when he turns over and you see more of his face, he's like, I'm done with Earth. And Volkov is like, what? You're never going home? Seriously? Like, you're just going to stay here? Is that even possible?
Yeah, he's definitely in stark contrast to the sort of brash, confident, cocky, flashy sort of a Hal Jordan, pilot Hal Jordan that we've seen in sort of regular DCU continuity. To see here, he's just like you said, he's a miner. He's working. He's not this star fighter pilot or anything. And you can tell, if anything, he just seems like depressed about life. Like, he's like, no, I'm not going back to Earth. I'm done with Earth. And his Volkov's like, what? You're done with Earth? What the hell are you talking about?
And I mean, I'm really glad you bring that up, because the way that we introduce characters is often more important than what we see overall in terms of long-term development. Because the best thing to know when you're trying to develop a character's hero's journey is to know where they start. And often I felt with Hal Jordan in the past, they never had to do too much for him because, you know, there was a lot of exposition around him. People just knew who he was. I feel like for the first time, even as a comic book reader who liked DC Comics and liked the Green Lantern Corps and stuff, this is really what felt like the first real introduction to the person of Hal Jordan, even better than what Jeff Johns did in Rebirth and Secret Origins. All really good, but you know, it was really just that was more of a retelling than it was anything else. And for me, it didn't really land, you know, stick the landing with that.
I mean, this almost seems like a new character, at least in the beginning, which I guess maybe is half the point of the Earth One stuff.
They could have named him something entirely different.
Well, yeah, if you're going to do that, then I guess you could just have a new character in that case.
Yeah, like that was one of the things with this. I'm like, you know what? You could have just done it entirely new. Like, there's no, and we'll see this continuing with the story. Like, there is, like, okay, Ultimate Peter Parker is a lot like regular Peter Parker and stuff like that. This Hal Jordan is almost nothing like the regular DC Hal Jordan.
Yeah, they kind of just took the name and created a new character and pasted the name on it. Kind of like they do, ironically. Doo-doo? I said doo-doo, huh? Kind of like they do. They do in DC, where they pass the ring to various characters, and you know, when a new character gets the ring, he's just a different person with the ring. That's kind of like what they are doing here. They're just passing the Green Lantern mantle onto a different person named Hal Jordan, essentially, instead of kind of developing it around what we know of as Hal Jordan. But I don't know. It's with these reboots. I guess it's not really a reboot, but these sort of retellings of character origins. It's kind of, a fine line here. It's like, what does it make sense to change? And then, because we can't just tell the same exact story, or what's the point of doing this at all? But then at the same time, if you're going to change too much and change like the core of who characters are, why even call it a retelling of anything? Why not just make an original story? So yeah, I guess it's a line they always kind of have to straddle in some way.
Yeah. And I mean, this Hal Jordan, I mean, like, the writers are really trying to make it known. If you think you know him, you don't. We're back to Volkov, and he's looking over at Jordan, who's still off in the corner, you know, doing his thing. And he's like, how long has it been, Jordan? And Jordan's walking away. He's like, hey, I'm going to see what's over this ridge, because earlier he mentioned, why would we leave? I think I'm finding something. Something's a little bit odd earlier. So Volkov, you know, switches the channel so that way they can have a private conversation away from all the other miners. And they're like, no, seriously, how long has it been since you were on Earth? And Jordan responds, it was just after the Arrowhead launched. And Volkov is like, what, the Arrowhead? You mean when it was still NASA? That was like 10 years ago. And Jordan's like, 8. And Volkov's like, Jordan, you were NASA? That's hilarious. So now we can basically tell is that Jordan isn't just another miner. He was one of the first miners. And not just one of the first miners. He might be one of the miners who's been in space the longest. So any idea you had of sociable, jock-like, cocky fighter pilot Hal Jordan, this ain't it.
No, it's definitely not. As we will find out going forward here, I don't know. I could go in loops to say the same thing over and over, but it's definitely a different character. Whether that's a bad thing or a good thing, we will leave up to the viewers, the readers, the listeners, all of you.
Yeah. And while Jordan is going around the corner, he keeps getting this detection of this different metal, different from the other palladium and other ore that they've been trying to look for. While, you know, Volkov is just trying to talk his ear off. I don't know if he wants to be friends or if he just wants to get more information, but he's like, you know, I still love the whole idea, exploration, bringing people together, all that stuff your generation believed in. They're really trying to make Jordan seem old. Instead of scrounging around for the metal that makes people's phones work and not even hoping to go beyond the solar system. But I never would have pictured Harold Jordan in NASA, not in a million years. So I like
how
this.
How did you say his name just now?
Harold, because it's different.
It almost sounds like you turned Harold into Hal halfway through.
Yeah, like it's weird because he's never Harold. He's just Hal. So, I mean, it's just one of those things. But I like what you mentioned earlier, because as I was trying to really paint the picture for people who have not read this yet, like this is like when I think of space, I still think of it like how I saw it growing up, like the space age, the space race, the beauty and the mastery of space and all of it can do. This is space without the specialness. This is almost like how we see space now.
Yeah, that part I kind of like. I kind of like that it just shows a sort of a grimmier, probably more realistic view of what it would be like to be out mining for random metals like on the moon and not making it all glitz and glamour, which I don't know. At one part, it sort of helps the story and helps you feel, because Hal is being presented here as a very sort of like gritty, dark character. So the setting is actually very fitting to him, but it's also seems odd based on what he's saying. Like, you know, he's saying, screw Earth. I'm not going back to Earth. What, you want to stay this grimy, gross, gritty moon? Like, what's wrong with you? But I guess that just kind of, you know, it's all laying the groundwork of what this version of the Hal Jordan character is.
Yeah. And we continue. Volkov's been just kind of putzing around while Jordan is looking around the other side of this asteroid. And he sees this metal piece come out of the ground as he kind of like kicks it around, and he's like, wait a second, this actually has markings on it. And what we begin to see is that as he's like hitting the ground and stuff, what he uncovers is an alien aircraft just randomly here. We haven't even gotten to aliens yet, but Hal has found something, which is terrifying because it's just there. And, you know, I see it and it's like, what the hell is this giant spaceship doing there? So he calls over Volkov, and Volkov comes over the ridge and he sees Jordan on top of this alien spacecraft. And he's like, Jordan, what the hell? We're going to have to report this. I mean, you probably shouldn't even touch it. But what does Jordan do? He ignores him, and he's breaking open the side door to actually get inside. And he looks at Volkov, who's like, oh, come on, man, we got to go back. This is pretty scary. And Jordan makes fun of him. And he's like, some noble explorer. So they go inside and it looks very, very human-like. Like, it almost looks like the inside of one of their spaceships or something. And they're just kind of walking around. It's like something out of Alien. Like it's not just regular sci-fi. It's like sci-fi horror.
Yeah, there's wires hanging. You know, there's evidence of some possible destruction of some kind, and it's dark, and but it looks close enough to human that, you know, you kind of don't know what's going on.
Prometheus. This kind of reminded me of Prometheus, the film. And the next page goes ahead and really lays it on thick how strange this is. They go to the far end of the ship and they see this giant robot just there. And, you know, my first thought when I would see that would be like, oh, shit, what's going on? Jordan just looks at it and he's like, this is incredible. And and he looks at it and Volkov is just wondering, like, is it dead? Is it alive? And Jordan responds, judging by the layer of dust on this thing, I'd say we're safe. So they keep kind of going through the ship. They're scavenging it. And all of a sudden they find this energy source coming up on their radar. They follow it to another end of the ship corridor and they see this giant green lantern. And there's really no fanfare here. It's like they turn a corner and it's just right there. And they're like, huh, an energy source for the ship? The crash had to be, I don't know, hundreds of years ago, even more. And they're still trying to figure out what's going on. Like, they think it's a battery. They don't know what it is. They're still looking around. And as they turn the corner, they see a dead purple alien. And, you know, I think Volkov is like, oh, God, is that guy dead? And if you look at it, he's a purple alien wearing what, you know, classic readers know is a Green Lantern ring and uniform. And, you know, I'll just go ahead and spoil it. This is Abin Sur, but not the Abin Sur that we're accustomed to, because this Abin Sur been dead for a long time.
Yeah, this, like I said, it looks like it had been hundreds of years, and his body just looks like somewhat decayed. As you know, it's hard to tell with the purple skin, but yeah, he looks pretty gross. This is not a fresh corpse by any means.
Yeah. So what ends up happening is the captain of the ship ends up calling Volkov and Jordan to get back. They're like, listen, the contract's over. We're heading home. We're about to leave this rock and you need to head over here. So what they do is they're about to leave and they go around and I think it's Volkov. He goes and he grabs the ring from the dead Abin Sur Green Lantern's hand. And as he does that, something happened, kind of like Aladdin, where he grabs the lantern and the lamp and everything kind of starts falling apart. Ironically, bad timing, as they're about to leave, the whole ship begins to actually shake and fall off the ridge. It's probably because of how the ship landed and the fact that with all this movement going on between Jordan and Volkov, it's about to fall off. So Jordan is out at this point, it seems, and the ship is falling off the cliff and he starts screaming for Volkov. They end up, you know, finding each other. Jordan gets back in time to find him. And as it's about to fall off, they're running out. So you see this giant thing. It's almost like a scene out of Uncharted. It's like they're running on top of the ship as the ship is falling backwards to jump back on the ridge. It's a Fast and Furious type of move right there. And luckily, they go ahead and they get back to the ship. And as they're going back to the main ship, since this was kind of like a lunar lander type of thing, it's going back to the main ship that has everybody. Jordan is, you know, kind of getting a lecture by the captain. And at this point, he's like, well, you know, you might not be too mad. I found this alien ship and we've got what we think is a power source, which is in Volkov's backpack. And, you know, he pulls it out. And he puts the ring on, which, by the way, if someone's going to go ahead and take a ring off of a dead body, I'm at least going to wash it first. He just kind of puts it on. he picks up the lantern to apparently charge the ring, and this green energy starts emitting, and it's freaking him out. Freaks him out so much that he moves his hand, and he blasts a hole through the ship, and it throws him back. At this point, they are absolutely screwed, much like something out of that movie of Sandra Bullock, Gravity. They're immediately getting sucked out. Jordan grabs onto a handle, grabs Volkov's hand, and as he's about to get pulled out along with the lantern that gets shot out, his hand slips, but Jordan is able to hold on to the ring. So Volkov just gets shot out and Jordan's looking at him and he's screaming no, and he is freaking out. Everyone on the other ship is staring at this giant travesty. They're like, oh my God, what is happening? So as they're calling for him, what ends up happening? Volkov's body slams into the hull of the ship and everyone else, all the other miners are looking at it and they're just like, oh my God, he is dead. But what about Jordan? Jordan comes out as their ship explodes, but he's alive. He is covered in this giant green shield almost while he holds Volkov's ring. And, you know, at this point, everyone is just wondering what the hell is going on. So a lot has happened.
Looks pretty badass here.
Yeah, I mean, a lot has happened in just a couple of pages.
Yeah, and I do like that. I like that it, you know, that Hal did not just instinctively put on the ring. Even in this scene, he has not put on the ring yet. He's just holding it. But even just holding it, it does enough to recognize him as the user or what have you, and surrounds him with that protective energy. But yeah, I remember reading this when I first saw Volkov put on the ring. I'm like, what is this guy doing with the ring? But that did not last very long. And I don't know. I don't know if that was just supposed to be, you know, just it's too powerful for him to handle or whatever, or if it's more towards the idea of these rings choose their user, so to speak. They find a worthy one, and maybe Volkov just wasn't worthy, so he probably shouldn't have put the ring on.
Yeah, I mean, in the mainstay DC universe, if you're not the designated owner of the ring, it won't work for you. And you know, the other thing that, you know, is they're trying to build these stark differences. I mean, Abin-Sur dies and his ring is passed on to Jordan. So the ring finds him. This is the exact opposite. Not only did he find the ring, but by anyone being able to basically begin to charge it and use its powers, what we are basically seeing right now is that Jordan is not special. And I think that's something to really, you know, pay attention to, because that is going to make this a very different Green Lantern story than what traditional readers may be used to, where he is chosen because of his strength of will and character and everything. It's by destiny, whereas this is almost by mistake.
Yeah, in the comics, it's very clear that the rings always like choose their user out of a selection of like basically whoever's around or whoever's on that planet at the time. Whereas here it is the exact opposite. It's basically it's finders keepers. You know, it's whoever you put that ring on, you're a Green Lantern now. So I don't know if I like that or don't like that, but it's definitely a difference that they spell out pretty clearly here in the beginning.
Yeah. I mean, it's very much in a way, not like King Arthur and the Sword and the Stone where it's destiny and it's assigned to somebody by fate. This is more like Lord of the Rings, where, you know, anyone can hold the ring. It just happens to be Frodo who's burdened with it. So it comes with pros and it comes with cons.
A very adept, nerdy analogy.
I just aim to please the people. But speaking of pleasing the people, we get our danger, as if it hasn't been dangerous enough. Back on the asteroid where the ship was able to crash off into the bottom of the cliff, we're back inside and we see that giant robot. Its eyes glow as it detects an energy, which we can assume is the Green Lantern energy that is protecting Hal Jordan. We're back above. Hal Jordan is staring back into the giant freighter, the Ferris freighter, and everyone is looking at him and they're like, wait, is he moving? How is he alive? What's that stuff around him? And they're freaking out right now because he's just emitting so much energy, so much radiation. So Jordan is freaking out too. He's like, oh my God, I can breathe. I can hear myself talk. Like I can fly now. So he's trying to figure this out because he's in shock. And what he does is he doesn't put the ring on. He's just holding it. So as he's trying to get accustomed to things and he lets go of the ring, he realizes that that giant protective energy field goes away. So what he has to do before he suffocates and freezes to death is quickly grab it before he dies and actually put it on. So at this point, he's starting to realize that if I don't keep this ring on, I'm going to die in space. And as he gets it on and the energy field comes back to him, he flies over to the ship. He can't talk with them. He doesn't have his communicator. So they're trying to gesture to each other. And one of the miners, Henson, wants to go over and save Hal, wants to open up a seal for him off the side of the ship. But they begin to realize, wait a second, that thing is emitting dangerous radiation. The captain goes over to the guy and he's like, I know this hurts, but we can't let Jordan back in here. Not while he's infected with that green energy, radiation, whatever. So Jordan is waiting by this window. He's like, okay, guys, let me in. And this is kind of sad. She pulls up, you know, a high-tech iPad or something like that. And she types, risk too great. Can't expose crew to the radiation. Our thoughts are with you. And you see his face for the first time. This is the first time we see real emotion on Hal, who's just been like this.
It's like a sad puppy.
Yeah, like he's been like stoic, you know, Clint Eastwood this entire time, man of no name-ish. And now he actually looks like, oh, shit, they mean it. And they're right. So he...
He just asked Sally to the prom, and she said she already had a date with Jack the Jock, with Jack the quarterback.
Sad, sad day.
Oh, okay.
So, and I mean, everyone is really shook by this. Another one of the minors is like, listen, we can't just watch him die. And they just have a discussion about this. And this whole time, you know, Hal is just floating there, being all sad and stuff. Next thing you know, right behind him, that giant robot from the ship comes alive, flies, and hits him from the back. And I got to say, for the artwork, I had not been familiar with this artist before. The artist is Karina Bechto. I did go back and look at some of her other stuff. I always thought this all seems kind of Star Wars-y, the way that they do space. She had actually done Star Wars Legacy right before this, back in the Star Wars Legends canon.
That explains a lot.
Yeah, so, I mean, I really like it right now, because the thing that I always kind of thought was cheesy of the other Green Lantern comics is all really bright and shiny, and it looks almost cartoony. This is almost like a sci-fi horror, which I really like.
This is almost like Frank Miller does Green Lantern, or you know, style-wise.
Yeah. It reminds me of the films Alien. It reminds me of Avatar in a way. All James Cameron films. So I think that's the best way to describe it. If James Cameron was directing a Green Lantern movie, I think it would be like this. Oh, man. Wouldn't that be awesome? That would be awesome.
You mean Ridley Scott? Well, if you're talking about Alien anyway.
What did Ridley Scott do? Who did Avatar?
That's James Cameron did Avatar. But Ridley Scott is the Alien guy.
He did Alien? What did James Cameron do?
A whole bunch of shit, but not Alien. Huh. He might have worked on an Alien movie or something. I'm not sure. But, I mean, Ridley Scott is the mind and director behind Aliens. I think James Cameron was supposed to do a sequel or something like that at some point.
I know Ridley Scott did Prometheus.
Yeah.
Well, anyway, if you like that shit, you're going to love this shit. And the shit continues. This robot...
A rare fact check here on Psychopathic.
The shit continues, and Hal is getting his... or Harold. I don't even think they've called him Hal yet. It's so weird. It's so odd. I'll call him Hal for consistency's sake. Hal is getting his shit kicked in by this giant robot. It's attacking him and kicking him around like it's nobody's business. So Hal...
You know what it is? Ridley Scott did Alien, and James Cameron did Alien. The sequel with Sigourney
Weaver. Was she not in the first one?
She's in the first one. I don't know why I said with Sigourney Weaver. Yeah, I mean, she's in both of them, yeah. But yeah, he came in and did the sequel.
So I was not wrong. I was just not accurate. Right. Okay.
You were eventually.
I was in the ballpark. I was in the ballpark.
Yeah.
But, you know, Hal is getting his shit kicked in by this robot. And I gotta say, it's really hard to make robots look really cool or unique in comics. But what I like about the drawing of this one is that they've got kind of like the exposed mouth and stuff. So it kind of looks like the Terminator in a sense. So they're really trying to make this one robot feel not like just another faceless, you know, mechanical goon. It actually feels like a formidable foe. So Hal is fumbling around. Try saying that a million times. Hal is fumbling around, and then he realizes, wait a second. This thing blew a hole in the ship earlier. What if I try and blow up the robot? So he starts shooting lasers at the robot. Eventually, he's just like, you know what? Screw it. So they're doing the whole epic fly into each other classic move. And Hal actually seems to get the upper hand, and he's just pushing this robot, and he's just going farther and farther and farther. And everyone is back on the ship watching this epic space fight, and they're like, did y'all see that? Everyone saw that, right? So by the time Hal, you know, he's pushing this robot as fast and as far as he possibly can, the whole thing just explodes in this epic one-page splash.
Yeah, it looks like he came in with, like, I don't know, like one kind of final push of his fist, because in that full page panel where he explodes, it kind of looks like he's delivering an uppercut or something that's going right through the body.
It's like a falcon punch to the nuts. Falcon!
Do manhunters have nuts?
Well, he had the manhunter had teeth, but not anymore.
True. So, yeah.
And speaking of not anymore, it seems like all of Hal's energy is disappearing. We see the light begin to go out. So while the robot is just floating off in a million pieces, it seems that Hal's ring has run out of Green Lantern energy, and he's floating off and suffocating, and the page goes black. So right now, what I can definitely say is one thing I love about this book, the action. They don't throw in thought balloons. They don't throw in lots of dialogue. It's just ass kicking.
Yeah, it's very show don't tell, which I like because that's kind of what comics should be. Like we've discussed a few times, I'm a huge, huge, huge fan of a couple writers that do a lot of exposition, a lot of prose, like Alan Moore, Neil Gaiman. I love their work, but it's called work for a reason because it takes work to get through them and to read them. And it is nice to sometimes just see a comic embracing the medium, the fact that it's a visual medium, and really driving that home by showing you what's happening. I don't need Hal Jordan's inner monologue during this battle. You know, you could have had inner monologue where he says, oh, it looks like the lasers don't really, I can kind of shoot the lasers. Oh, maybe I should just fly into him. Maybe you don't need all of that. You just see his, the look on his face. You can tell what he's thinking and you see the actions that are derived from that thinking, but you don't have to see his whole thought process exquisitely laid out in beautiful English prose. You can just see it happening and understand what's going on, which helps the story fly a lot faster too.
And the next four pages really exemplify that. Hal wakes up. He wakes up, so he didn't die. And he looks to be in some type of medical bay lab. He's got wires all around him, kind of like Neo from The Matrix. He looks around, and you see this little like display case of this creepy alien spider thing jumping out at him. So he's freaking out. Turns around. There's a bunch of stuff in like display cases and stuff like that. He even pulls out this giant tube that was going down his throat. So obviously, somebody found him, and somebody's keeping him alive.
This really is very Neo waking up in Matrix.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, that's what came to my mind. I mean, it's really trying to show you, like, this isn't just the awesome, fantastic, futuristic world that we're accustomed to if you're a Green Lantern reader. Some things can be scary. And for the first time seeing this, I think Hal is acting like anyone would. And, you know, he runs out of this medical bay, and he's on this other planet, we can assume. You see these giant bug creatures flying through the air. You see structures, so you know you've got, smart, sentient creatures there, and it looks like he's on an iceberg, and he looks around, there are like a bunch of icebergs, so it's a very alien planet. He's looking around, and what he realizes is that he's standing on ice and he's slipping, so he slips off and he's about to go ahead and fall off this giant glacier, and who comes over to save him? The great giant Kilowog himself. You see this giant pig-like alien muscle-bound dude, and he comes over. He's like, whoa, come on, let me help you up right there. I'm Kilowog Ev, and we're on the same team. And you see that Kilowog is wearing a green uniform, but more strikingly, he has his own Green Lantern ring, and he even pulls it up. He's like, look, I'm a lantern too. So he picks up Hal, and they go back into the medical bay, and for one... And this is what we'll answer in a second. My thought was, why is he speaking English? It's kind of a trope where it's like, oh, everyone in the galaxy speaks English. They're about to go ahead and explain that.
I went through the exact same thing because that always drives me crazy. Like, I can believe the wildest story you want to spin for me, but if two characters from different planets show up and they're all just speaking English right away, I got issues with that. But that was my first thought. And like you say, like you're going to get into here, they do immediately address it, thankfully.
Yeah, and long story short, Kilowog is way more talkative. So he's another character where it's like his personality
is
completely...
He's really the anti-Hal here. He's just this like chatty, chirpy, hey, buddy, let's hang out. Let's be lanterns. Here's what's going on. He's like the exact opposite of the personality that we've seen from this version of him.
Yeah, I mean, he's even different from his version in the main DC universe. Not always very nice, not always very talkative. But apparently what we gather is he's a scientist, saw the energy burst and the Manhunter attack. He saved Hal, and he wants to go ahead and, you know, learn more about other Green Lanterns. He thinks that Hal has been a Green Lantern for a while, so he's just throwing out all these questions, all these statements, and then he catches himself. He's like, oh, I'm sorry. I have so many questions for you, but as a scientist, I must, and please don't be offended. So we've got Woke Kilowog, please don't be offended. I must ask, what breed of alien are you? And he kind of looks up, and Hal is like, I'm Earth human. And Kilowog's like, that's incredible. I've never heard of an Earth human before. But as I said, we're very isolated here out of necessity. Now, I have one more very important question for me personally. The ring was passed on to me after the death of my predecessor. I have so little to go on, just stories, folk tales of the core. First time we're hearing about a core. Can you teach me? I mean, can you teach me how to be a true Green Lantern? So they just kind of awkwardly stare at each other, and Hal's like, what? And Kilowog is like, I know, I'm asking a lot, but I thought in return for, and Hal cuts him off. He's like, I don't know anything. I mean, this ring, I just found it. I don't even know what it is. And Kilowog is like, how is that even possible, man? And Hal is, you know, he's feeling just really awkward right now, kind of put on the spot. Look, I'm sorry. I don't know what to tell you. I don't even know how I'm understanding what you're saying. And Kilowog is like, impossible. No one but a powerful and skilled lantern could have done what you did. And he's like, did what? And Kilowog looks at him and he's like, you killed a manhunter. And Hal is like, oh, what? Before we go any further, I think this is actually one of the funniest exchanges I've read in a comic recently on the show.
Yeah, I enjoyed this quite a bit. Like, especially, I mean, if you're Hal and you see this other Green Lantern guy showing up, you're like, all right, finally, someone can tell me what the hell's going on here. And then you realize this guy, he's like the equivalent of a little kid, just like looking for a mentor, thinks he found one in Hal Jordan. He's like, oh, this guy's an expert. This guy killed a manhunter. Of course, this guy's going to be my guide. And then they each just realize, like, oh, no, neither of us are what the other one expects here.
I'm sorry, who's the director from Thor Ragnarok? The New Zealand dude?
Taika Waititi?
Yeah, Taika Waititi. I would love for him to play the voice of Kilowog. Like, hi, I'm Kilowog. I'm a Green Lantern. I've been here for a while.
You killed a manhunter, mate.
Like, you're a human. That's cool. Can you teach me? That would be hilarious.
Yeah.
But
perfect casting.
Yeah, but anyway, they turn around.
Almost as good as John C. Reilly as D-Man.
Yes.
Probably our best casting yet.
Kevin Feige, call us. We're full of ideas. But they turn around and they see that Kilowog has his own, you know, decommissioned manhunter in the corner all strung up. And he's like, you know, it's a manhunter. I gathered the remains from where I found you and I study it, you know, for weaknesses, for any flaw. I've never seen a real one before. But I mean, are you saying you didn't defeat it? And Hal's like, listen, man, I just fought it and I just, you know, I did the thing, man. Look, before I woke up here, I thought it had killed me. I know nothing about your lanterns. This robot thing attacked. I mean, it could have destroyed our ship. I just acted on instinct. You know, I guess I had the tool, you know, and I just used it to fight him. So Kilowog is like, well, it's been a long time since I heard of anyone standing up to the manhunters, much less killing one. And Hal is freaking out. He's like, are there more of these things? Mark, how about you take this page real fast?
Where Kilowog explains the whole situation.
Yeah, that one while I COVID cough into the corner.
Sure thing. Well, yeah, Kilowog at this point kind of takes over the exposition to explain things both to Hal as well as to us, the audience. But he basically explains, he's like, well, but this Earth world, but it must be pretty far away if you don't know about the Manhunters and the Guardians and all this stuff. But he explains that if you don't know the tyranny of the Manhunters. So he basically explains that the Green Lantern Corps were once based on the central world of Oa. He says that they were the peacekeepers, but that was a long time ago before my being Kilowog, his great-great-grandfather, was born. He said the Manhunters then rose up and killed them all and scattered the rings throughout the galaxy. He said, I just have mine because mine was passed down from generation to generation, and I've heard there are others. But he says some say that the Owens also created the Manhunters too, but we don't really know for sure. There's many, many stories. So that basically brings us to where we are. What my question here for Kilowog is, if his ring was passed down for generations, why didn't any of the people that pass it down to you teach you a little bit more about it?
That's some bad homeschooling right there. But that's
some terrible homeschooling. They figured he'd just learn at Green Lantern School eventually. Meanwhile, they don't realize the school has been shut down and has been doing distance learning for the last few decades.
Don't cry for me, California. And that's another thing that we kind of mentioned earlier. Kilowog mentions that it's been passed down through his family. What this really solidifies is that unlike the mainstay DC universe where the ring chooses its holder, once again, we have another example of somebody who might be worthy for it, but really this is just a tool. It's just a thing. It doesn't make anyone more special.
Yeah. And I like that. like, okay, like the ring doesn't choose you. Like, it's not Thor's hammer. You're not necessarily worthy. But they also do, again, it's more show, not tell. So they never tell you, like, the ring is choosing Hal Jordan, because it doesn't. Hal just kind of gets it. But they do show you through his actions and through Kilowog's surprise at how he was able to defeat a Manhunter. Now, maybe it's because this was like a Manhunter that had already been a bit in a big battle with Abin Sur, and it was already kind of, you know, maybe on its last legs. But still, the reason Hal was able to defeat it and do this was because he was able to act instinctually with the ring. So they still kind of show you and maybe imply that there is some specialness to Hal, the fact that he was able to use this ring, even if he was just acting on instinct, even if he really didn't know what the hell he was even doing, he was able to defeat this Manhunter, and that was impressive enough to Kilowog that he had assumed before this conversation that, of course, this guy's an experienced Green Lantern. This guy's amazing. He can defeat a Manhunter. So it is showing you, again, showing you, not telling you so much, that in some way, Hal is kind of special here.
Yeah. And we continue. Kilowog and Hal agreed to teach each other what they do know from what they've experienced. And they go up and they just go out and they start flying. They're getting some practice in. And next, you know, they start racing each other. And Hal actually cracks a smile. And he's like, man, this is actually pretty awesome. And he goes over and flies next to Kilowog. And he's like, you know what I just realized? This is what I've always wanted. And you just see them flying. I mean, the way the green energy kind of bursts around them, I like this better than what I've ever seen from Green Lantern in other comics. The way the energy kind of flows is kind of like flashes lightning, so to speak. This is the best way that I've ever seen it, because it looks fantastic. That's the best way I could describe it. And as they're flying around this cold, dark, icy world, it looks like something you'd see on screen. And what's even funnier is they've got their own like little Rocky montage. I mean, you see them learning how to blow shit up, and Hal's hitting the wrong target, and they're flying, and they're fighting big space monsters and stuff. So some time has gone by, and what we see is that
this feels like the scene out of a movie. This is like this is when you get the Tom Petty like learning to fly, and then we see the montage of Hal and Kilowog just flying around space and blasting out ice and just having a fun time. This is two buddies getting to know each other, and Hal getting to finally experience what he maybe didn't even realize he's always wanted, was to be just zipping and flying around space.
Yeah.
It's fun.
And meanwhile, back at Bolivax Vic, it's the Home Guard headquarters, so these are Kilowog's people. They see that these two have been flying around, and they're like, uh-oh, something's happened. We recognize those rings. Eventually, Hal and Kilowog, they're camping, and they're actually questioning who should have the Green Lantern, because if one of them doesn't have it, that means they'll never be able to charge their rings again. So as they're having this discussion, we see that basically some of these Bolivax space cops come down out of nowhere, and they're like, stand down, Kilowog, you know the rules, you may or maybe you don't, since you're flagrantly breaking them by using that ring. Now step aside, we're here for the alien. And as they're talking, they're basically like, listen, you're going to bring a lot of danger to us. Don't you know that, you know, this could potentially bring a lot of problems here, not just with the ring, but with a human? Like, this is, we got to arrest you. So as this is happening, Kilowog is basically like, you're just not going to take him. And at this point, we could basically tell they're going to start fighting until basically you have these lasers just come down. It's almost like a scene in a movie where it's like, you can't take him, let's fight, even though we both have a good moral claim to why we're doing this. Lasers start coming from the sky. They look up, and it's a whole bunch of Manhunters. They look like Sentinels from X-Men, and they're just blowing the shit out of everybody. So they go around, they end up just killing like half those space cops. I mean, it's like vicious murder. And then as we look back up into the sky, we see this giant space fight. I mean, it looks freaking awesome. I cannot describe how awesome it looks. Like, this looks like something out of an IMAX film in space.
Yeah, I mean, the art continues to be the big strength here of this. I mean, I'm enjoying the story as well, but the art just stands out so much to me. You really see a lot of these space battles, like, in in ways that we just don't typically see them portrayed. Like, I mean, and even in this panels, like where you see the space battle and all this, like the blue energy of the Manhunters, the green energy of the Lanterns, it still feels dark and gritty, even with all this flashy, these flashy lights all around. So they really do a good job of keeping this feeling of space as this really dark, treacherous, gritty place, even while lighting the whole place up with amazing colors and really showing you this IMAX-esque battle, as you kind of described it there.
Yeah. Anyway, we go back to the battle. Kilowog is being basically pinned down by a bunch of Manhunters. They're about to murder him until Hal is able to swiftly grab him. And much like earlier, where he just sped off into space, he's holding Kilowog, and they fall on another planet. And as Kilowog is looking around, he's like, wait, where are we? And Hal's like, man, I just use basically all my energy to get out of here. And long story short, Kilowog is like, no, man, I got to go back. Those Manhunters, they're just not coming for me. They're going to kill my entire planet. And I need to go back. And Hal's like, are you serious? Like, we still don't know our full powers, and they tried to arrest us. I mean, if we're going to fight them and have any hope, we need help from, like, I don't know, but it can't be us. And Kilowog just looks at him. He doesn't say anything, and he flies back. And Hal's like, you can't go back. It's suicide. At least let me go with you. And before he could finish the sentence, Kilowog just blasts off into the sky. So now Hal is trying to really figure out, like, man, what's my next move? As he's trying to figure it out, he looks around, and ironically, like, this is the one criticism I have. Hal just kind of finds things, much like he finds the ship. He turns around and he sees an ancient city, and his ring is giving him some readings. And basically, this ancient city on this other random ice planet was once underwater. And he has some flashbacks of when he was at NASA, and what you actually see is him doing a test in one of those giant NASA pools where they stick the shuttle underwater in order to simulate another environment. So basically what they're trying to show is that Hal is touching back into that explorer side of him. But what we also see is that in the flashback, it kind of moves around a little bit from when NASA was bought out by Ferris. And apparently during one of the missions, something happened because he's talking to somebody on a ship. And next thing we see a giant explosion. All we can gather from that is that, you know, Hal has kind of a chip on his shoulder from something. We're still going to figure that out. But anyway, he pulls over to the side of this building and he sees the giant Lantern logo. And what we hear behind him is somebody says Penelope's, and Hal turns around and he sees Kilowog there. And Hal's like, what? And Kilowog is like, Penelope's was the Green Lantern of this sector. This was his world, Penelo. They sound almost the same. I think the ring is a hard time translating their language.
Penelope's of Penelo. That's a hell of a name.
Yeah.
Right there.
But basically what they have just found is the remnants of another Green Lantern's layer, so to speak, and another civilization. And basically this is a result of the Manhunters killing everyone. So, I mean, this is some serious, like, genocidal level shit we're dealing with, because they don't just go after the Lanterns, they go after everybody.
Yeah, indeed. I mean, this all just seems to happen so fast, you know, like it's not necessarily a criticism, it might be a little bit of a criticism, but it's this feels like it's all the same within like the same 4 hours. I mean, we don't know how long Hal was kind of out of it on Kilowog's world there, but you know, one minute he's mining in space, next minute he's battling a Manhunter, next minute he's learning to be a Green Lantern, and suddenly he's on this way other planet in the wake of the Manhunter devastation. I mean, you could imagine that maybe that scene where him and Kilowog are like flying around and learning to use the ring, that's a montage over several weeks, so maybe he's gotten accustomed to it. But in terms of us reading the story, especially because it's not broken up, which I do like about it, I like that it's not broken up in issues, because there weren't issues here. These are released, I believe, just as they are, as one long volume each time. But that makes it kind of just feel like, wow, we're just zipping through this whole thing.
Yeah.
Which is not a complaint, necessarily. It's just an observation.
Yeah, and I mean, I really have to skip around a lot here, because there's one, there's not a lot of dialogue, and there's a lot of panels that have those montage-type scenes. Like the next one, where basically, like, Kilowog and Hal Jordan have to go from planet to planet to find rumors of other Green Lanterns. It's almost like if
this is the first time we really get the sense of the passing of time, just because they do show them, like, I kind of like it kind of harkens to like Star Wars, like, or like the Mandalorian, like they're going to different planets kind of like in disguise. They're not really dressed as superheroes. They kind of have these like raggedy clothes on. Like the one scene, the bird is like, the bartender's like this blue bird type creature.
And like he's Mos like, Eisley, oh, Cantina.
This yeah, it basically feels like the Mos Eisley Cantina. And this is where it finally feels like, all right, there's time is passing here. They're on a journey. They're on an adventure. Maybe it's not the same day, but up until this point, it really felt like this could all be the same day for all I can tell.
Yeah. I mean, if this was a regular series, this one volume would have been stretched out across like a dozen issues at minimum. Yeah. But anyway, they end up on this other planet. It's more of a foresty planet as they're trying to figure out what's poisonous to eat and what not to eat. You see this other alien, this orange-skinned, blonde-haired alien woman comes out with her own Green Lantern ring. She uses her ring to create a construct, and I forgot to mention, for people who don't know what they're called, like the Green Lantern blasts, when they actually create things with their imagination, are called constructs. So she basically creates these claws to grab Kilowog and Hal Jordan, and they're like, hey, like, you know, we're Green Lanterns, we need your help. And she replies, those rings mean nothing. I've seen your kind before. You're bandits, nothing more. Finding a weapon doesn't make you a warrior. And we know about war. And as, you know, she lights up the space around them, you see this giant tribe of people with bows and arrows, you know, basically ready to fire at Kilowog and Hal. And Hal's like, listen, you're right. We're not warriors, but like we need help. Because basically, to cut through like an entire page, we need you because we don't know what we're doing, and his planet's under attack, and it's kind of my fault, but not really. And you seem to be the only one that knows what they're doing, so you mind helping us out? And she's like, I don't know what to tell you at this point, man, but I do know somebody that can go ahead and provide some help. So they go back to another planet, and they're basically sitting down with this person who's going to go ahead and tell them the story of the Guardians.
This feels super Star Wars now, the more I think about it, like super Star Wars Mandalorian, that classic, you know, every time we find someone who can help us, they're going to send us to another planet to talk to somebody else. And we might have to solve a riddle or another adventure along the way, but we're moving throughout space, meeting various characters to try to finally get to the end goal
here. And basically they find this other alien. He was at one point a Green Lantern himself, and what he tells them is that the Guardians who created the Green Lantern Corps, they had a split, and what one of them wanted to do was basically control the galaxy, so he created the Manhunters, and the Manhunters were better than the Lanterns, and as that became a giant powerful threat to them, he used the Lanterns to kill all the Manhunters. So basically the Guardians were split. So Kilowog and Jordan are like, wait a second, so the Guardians who created the Green Lanterns also created the Manhunters? And the guy's like, yeah, and you're basically screwed and your whole planet's gonna die. I can't really help you. So at this point, you know, Kilowog and Jordan, they're just really depressed, and they're at this space bar drinking. And at this point, he's like, listen, man, like, I want to ask, like, what's with you? Why are you such an asshole to somebody, to paraphrase lightly? And Jordan basically says that, you know, I went to space because I wanted to explore the world. But what ended up happening was the platform I was on, the Arrowhead, it was a defense platform. And long story short, something happened and it blew up and everyone died but Jordan. So at this point, you know, they're just drinking, they're sad. And by the way, they also mentioned just flippantly, oh, and both our rings are dead. Nobody's going to translate any of this. So they're just drinking. And at one point it's funny, cause you see Kilowog's dialogue. It changes from English to alien real fast.
Yeah. I loved that. I love that. And then Hal's just like, oh God. And on this too, like things couldn't get worse. Now we can't even understand each other. So, all right, screw it.
Yeah. And what makes it worse is that a whole bunch of Manhunters come down and they start attacking the space bar. And Jordan, I mean, he's just a regular human. He gets knocked out real fast. What we see is that the Manhunters, they're not going to kill everyone this time. They're actually going to go ahead and enslave everybody. So Jordan and the others are just taken to this random planet that's been taken over. They're sent to these mines and they're given pickaxes and they're just being turned into slaves. And it's not just a day, because over the next couple pages, Hal grows this giant John Carter beard and he's looking around and, you know, some of the manhunters are just killing people. Others are just looking around like nothing's happening. So this is not a good situation. They are literally slaves.
Yeah, I mean, not long ago, he was zipping around through space with his new pig-like alien buddy having a good old time. And yeah, things are not going in the right direction. This feels very Exo Manowar to me, too. Him growing the beard and just kind of working in the mines, waiting for the right opportunity to strike out and get out of here. Although there's no indication that Hal's been thinking that. I mean, he's really not used to being a hero, as opposed to Arik of Dashia, who was a hero even before he was a superhero. He was a hero just in Dashia, you know, fighting the Romans. He was a heroic person, whereas Hal was just a space explorer mining guy who didn't want to go back to Earth. So I don't know if he seems like he might just be more resigned to the fact he's going to be picking away in the mines here for the rest of his life.
Yeah. And, you know, after maybe, like, let's just say a couple of months, something starts to happen. He starts to actually understand what the aliens are saying. And at first he's like, what's going on? Am I going crazy or am I really understanding them? Then one night while he's sleeping, he actually sees that the ring is starting to lighten up. And he just notices it, but he's going to keep it under wraps because he doesn't want anyone to really notice. And he doesn't know if it's at full power yet.
You think it's weird they let him keep the ring, or they didn't fully strip search him, you know, before they put him into the slave camp?
The manhunters must have.
That's the big plot hole for
me. They must have their own like TSA equivalent.
The very ineffective, as ineffective as TSA.
Take the toothpaste, let the gun go through.
Exactly. Hal had to leave his all his liquids behind. He couldn't bring his water up with him, but he could get the ring still in his pocket.
Yeah. But anyway, Hal is mining and this giant alien creature comes over and he's like, "You stole my spot, pale stick man." And Hal is like, "What?" And the guy's like, "You must think." And Hal starts just yelling at him. He's like, "This isn't your spot and you know it." And the guy's like, the pale stick talks. We will fix this. So just before he's about to get crushed by this alien, Hal uses the ring and blasts him. I mean, it's a pretty epic punch right there. And everyone is just looking around like, what just happened? And Hal realizes he done screwed up, because what immediately happens is another alien grabs him to throw him around the corner as the manhunters are coming in to quell the fight, because she knows that ring is obviously doing something because he was able to do that. So she basically arranges this octopus lady arranges basically like, "Hey, I'll help you get out of here if you help me get out of here." So they end up slipping out in the middle of the night. You know, they're talking about how to escape, and as you know, they're talking, she basically this is what's kind of stupid. She basically convinces Hal to let his guard down, and next thing you know, as they're sleeping, he wakes up and the ring is gone, and she's basically stolen it. So he looks around and he's like, shit. So she's off back near this other camp. She's holding the ring and she's like, "Oh, come on, charge." She doesn't know how to actually use it. So Hal, you know, finds her and he's like, "Listen, you got to be really careful with that." And, you know, they start fighting because she wants to keep it. And he's like, "No, you don't know what you're doing." And she's like, "Shut up. I'm going to go ahead and keep it." She blasts the side of the building. And next thing you know, the manhunters come. And what do to her? They freaking just disintegrate her. It's actually a pretty nasty scene of the octopus lady. So she did.
Bye bye, octopus lady. It was nice knowing you
for like three pages. Meanwhile, Hal is just basically
the most female we've gotten in this whole series, though, except for the chick on the spaceship in the beginning.
Yeah, but just like everything else, what is Hal's real power? Randomly finding things. That side of the building that she accidentally blew up as he's running away from the manhunters has a gigantic, giant ass Green Lantern. So he goes and aims the ring at it, and it's supercharged. Him. It's that iPhone on max. He is getting full power out of that. And what ends up happening is he sees the construct of a guardian. And what this guy is basically doing is he's telling him that, you know, the Guardians messed up. They got too power hungry. They went ahead and they wanted to save the galaxy. But in their pursuit of their own ego and power, that's what's launched this whole situation of the Manhunters. And it was a giant regret. So it's basically like a ghost Obi-Wan moment, but with a blue midget.
I do like all the different aliens here. I think they do a really good job of giving you these very distinct sort of different styles of aliens. Like it just adds to the lore of Green Lantern, but like the lore and the wider mythological feel of what we're getting here. Like this does not feel like a small story. Like it seemed like it might have been in the very beginning. It feels like we're just opening us up to this huge universe in a very much, we keep saying Star Wars, but that's because that's what it feels like. I mean, this feels like we've just dived headfirst into a sort of a Star Wars outer space, completely outside of this Earth universe here. The only thing remotely keeping us, you know, close to grounded is just the fact that Hal Jordan himself is just figuring this all out himself too at the same time.
Yeah. And I mean, the next couple pages, this is one of those things where you're really going to benefit if you actually pick up this copy. He's supercharged, right? Because of the giant ring and the little alien man, the Guardian, kind of telling him, like, you're our lost hope, Hal Jordan. You have to do this. He gets out and the Manhunters are about to start killing him. And he's just like, you know, I just got to do it. So he's like blasting them like freaking John Wick. And he's just going after tons and tons of Manhunters. And while he's, you know, he's a little bit intimidated by this, he's kicking their ass and he's able to escape. But what's even better is eventually he's able to go ahead and catch a few breaths. And what he realizes is that his ring can go ahead and contact all the other lanterns. So what he basically does is he is able to actually, for the first time in probably their entire lives, reach out to every person with a Green Lantern ring and basically tell them, listen, you don't know who I am. You have no reason to trust me, but here's what's going on. We're the last of our people who can defend the universe that these Manhunters are destroying and enslaving. And if you can hear me, let me tell you, I got this giant lantern, not bragging about it. I happen to be the first person to be supercharged. And if you want to go ahead and, you know, free your people and save yourselves, meet me here, like in Star Wars, and let's fight. So he goes back and he's like, I hope that worked. And he's fighting Manhunters, except these giant red, like super tank Manhunters come out and they just start socking him. And when the one punches him, like, you look at Jordan's face and it's just not pretty. At this point, all these other lanterns are showing up. You have the one lantern that looks like a gerbil. You've got one that's like a floating eye octopus thing. And that thing's creepy. And then Kilowog shows up and he's like, I just needed your location, buddy. And he destroys a Manhunter. And at this point, like, the next couple pages are just these giant fights. You even see some pilots come down with their own spaceships and they're launching missiles. It's explosions. Who's the guy that did Transformers? Michael Bay. It's Michael Bay Green Lantern. And next thing you know, out of nowhere, you see the orange skin, angry chick from the woods. She's there. You've got a dude that kind of looks like a testicle and a whole bunch of other lanterns. And they're just like, screw it. Yippee-ki-yay, motherfucker. And they're just blasting them. And these are full page spreads at this point. And it's just, this is some of the coolest space battle action in a comic you will ever witness.
Yeah, it's awesome. It's absolutely awesome. I mean, I love the arrival of all the lanterns. Just seeing the space diversity, if you will. This is like you said, it's a very woke book. A lot of diversity, a lot of caring about feelings and that sort of thing. But it's just so much fun seeing all these aliens come together and really lay it to these Manhunters. And just this is the kind of book you gotta see. Like our description is one thing, but so much of this book is visual, and the visuals are badass.
Yeah, and at this point, all the lanterns, the great giant awesome diverse lantern army right there, they're like, okay, like, you know, we're kicking a lot of ass right now, but there are a ton of Manhunters here and we've got this giant lantern. What do we do? So the one chick whose name I think Aria, she ends up basically getting everyone around and they're like, hey, what if we all supercharge our rings and the lantern, because we can survive it, but it'll kill everything else. So all the lanterns point their ring to the giant lantern. They supercharge it. And what it does is it basically creates this giant explosion, killing all the Manhunters. And it's awesome. And at this point, you know, the explosion is there. They're all looking around and Jordan is just like, am I alive? And Kilowog looks around.
My question is here.
I'm sorry, I'm just ranting. This is just cool.
What I was thinking here, though, like, yeah, we see it. It is badass. I mean, we see it destroys, and it's pretty good. It's a pretty good idea. Instead of just fighting all these things all day long, let's just like have a giant explosion that we all know we can survive. So that's a good idea and seems to work pretty well. But I'm thinking, okay, the Manhunters are all getting killed here, and the Green Lanterns, they're surviving because they're Green Lanterns. What about all these slaves?
I mean, they
show us. They show us later. But at the time, I'm like, did they think of that?
Yeah. Speaking of which, I mentioned the gerbil Green Lantern. His name is Vecca. He was the guardian earlier that told Kilowog and Jordan how all this happened. He decided to be brave and come down. And as everyone is celebrating, the one...
Is he supposed to be a guardian, too?
He was supposed to have worked with the guardians. I don't think he's...
He kind of looks like he's short like they are, but is also like
he's a hamster thing. So. You know, the guardians are very racially intolerant. They don't let anyone who's not a short blue person into the guardians. But he was there, and basically
maybe he was one of their pets, like Splinter. Like he learned enough by being around them, and then he became.
Well, he gets to have his Obi-Wan moment of short because everyone's celebrating the one Manhunter who survived blows a hole through his chest. So, you know, they
don't answer that. Because I thought that maybe there's the scene where they show, they show the lanterns all leaving like in their little energy fields. And I thought that this was him trying to get everybody else off the planet. But no, I think this is all land. Now, maybe it is.
It was
maybe
part
this is
of the planet. But anyway, okay. Vecca's been shot, and he's like, listen, we all came here because someone stood up. Pass this ring on, and please help. So that's his Obi-Wan moment. And what this also shows, again, is that the ring can't choose. The lanterns have to choose themselves. So as the lanterns are fleeing the planet because of another swarm of Manhunters coming, over the next couple pages, we see that for every deceased lantern, Kilowog and Jordan are going to new planets, freeing them and finding the bravest amongst them to give the lanterns on to. So now they're freeing all these planets. We were introduced to a couple of other guys that we know from the mainstay comics, Sinestro and a few other folks, Arissa. Arissa, who was the orange skinned warrior woman, she's nominated to lead the new Corps by Hal herself. So they're like, listen, she's the biggest warrior above us. She helped us on the other planet. Let's have her do it.
I like that they didn't just make it Hal too.
Yeah.
That would be too obvious and wouldn't have made as much.
Old school Hal in the regular DC universe would have totally made it himself. But anyway, now we're at this point where we see a guardian somewhere in the universe. And, at this point, what we can tell is that, the one guardian who's left is the guardian who created the Manhunters. And now all the Manhunters are gone. So he walks out and he's like, you know what? There's only one way I'm going to be able to actually bring true control and, authority to the universe. And he walks out. And what we see is a giant army of yellow lanterns.
Indeed.
So that leaves us at that cliffhanger, and just to wrap it up.
And this is the same guardian that Hal saw like inside the battery.
Yeah, it was right? The one basically saying, "What are you doing, man? Who do you think you are? You can't do this," and everything else. I jumped around. It was a lot of dialogue for that area, which is why, folks, you got to pick this up. But anyway, the one evil guardian alive, the guy who made the Manhunters, and now all the Manhunters are dead. So what he has is his backup plan, the Yellow Lanterns. Now we're back to the solar system we were at the beginning of the issue. We see Jordan has his own lantern. He's back on that asteroid where he found everything, and he set up a small memorial for Volkov. And he goes back down to Earth for the first time in almost a decade. And at this point, Jordan goes back to the captain of his team, and he surprises her. She turns around, and she's like, Jordan, is that really you? And at this point, he's like, listen, we're going to see these giant threats coming, and we've got threats on Earth. And what we can basically see is that Earth, and they don't really go into too much detail, but Earth is basically under this military regime of sorts, because now, Jordan has spent all this time liberating other planets from the Manhunters. Now he basically wants to free mankind. And, he looks there and he's like, listen, we don't have the tools to fight back, but now we have the tools. And as he pulls out his ring from under his pocket, he lights up, and we see for the first time in the entire volume, the Green Lantern symbol actually on his chest. And he looks While different from the mainstay Hal Jordan, this is the closest he's going to get to looking like the traditional Green Lantern. And that is the end of Volume 1.
Indeed it is. And we get the standard sketchbook afterwards here in the graphic novel, which I always find fun to flip through and just see what they're going through in the design process along the way.
Yeah. I can tell you, I wrote a review for secondprintcomics.com about Volume 2. It picks up almost immediately after this, but it is... It is awesome. So as somebody that would not call themselves a big Green Lantern fan, what I can say is that I'm a fan of this book and will continue to collect all future volumes of it.
This book showed me enough to make me want to read the next volume. So I will do that likely at some point after I get through the 20 other things that I'm trying to go through, some of which are for our patrons on a future Claire Continues. But yeah, this was I really enjoy this. You want me to go right into my grades or?
Yeah. Be my guest. Go ahead.
All right, let's see. What am I going to grade this? Well, let's start with the art here, because to me, the art is really what stood out in this book more than anything else. I had not heard of the artist beforehand, and I would like to see more from them, because the art was fantastic. I mean, the art was, it really portrayed space in, like we've said several times, not to beat this dead space horse here, but it makes space feel gritty, feel real, and yet still spectacular, and have that, you know, spectacular sci-fi feel to it that you want in an escapist work like this. And also I really liked how it just turned into, like, it had everything. It came in and became like a buddy cop adventure with Kilowog and Hal. It became sort of a hero space journey as they travel from space bar to space bar, meeting different aliens. And even though those sections were all truncated, they gave me the feel, the epic feel that I needed, where, as before, the pacing kind of just seemed like, whoa, is this all in one day? So that helped kind of flesh things out and make it feel longer while not making my read any longer. You know, a lot of this stuff was done effectively in just a few panels. And so much is just done through the artwork. But whether it's the sad puppy dog look on Hal Jordan's face when he's not allowed back in the space station, or whether, you know, it's just this is interactions with everything. You can see Hal's thought process when he's learning to use the ring more so than you need to hear him telling you his thought process. So I thought the art was just incredibly, incredibly effective here, to the point I'm going to give the art a 4.5. Like, I'm not ready to go full five, because I got to reserve those for some special artists and some special moments, but this is really darn close, and I was incredibly impressed by the artwork here. I mean, it just carries the whole thing, and I don't want to say carries, because that almost sounds like the writing is bad, and certainly not, but the art is absolutely the strength here. I mean, the art does so much of the storytelling on its own. So yeah, I'll give a 4.5 for the art, and then the story, I like the story a lot. I think it's really well done. I think maybe the biggest complaints one might have about the story, it's not my complaint, but it's something we touched on in the beginning, that is this really another version of Hal Jordan, or is this just a cool Green Lantern story that could have been Hal Jordan and could not have? And I guess this is just that fine line of, you know, like, to me, Ultimate Universe Peter Parker, it was clearly a different Peter Parker, because we're seeing a new origin story, and maybe he's got a cell phone now or something, but it still really felt like Peter Parker, whereas this did not feel like Hal Jordan to me so much. Elements of it, aspects of it, but to me, this kind of just, if you called this guy some other name, no one would have thought, oh no, this is Hal Jordan. You would have just thought it was a different character. So that's not really a complaint of mine, but it's a complaint I imagine a lot of maybe hardcore Green Lantern or Hal Jordan fans may have if they're just looking for a new Hal Jordan. So I'm not gonna really nick the score on that. But overall, I would say I found the writing enjoyable. I thought it was well done. If anything, the pacing just seemed a little too fast in the beginning, but I think that was a little bit made up for by how they stretched the story out, made it feel like a little larger and a little grander and scope as things went along. So I'm going to give the writing, why don't we say a 3.5, a very good, I would say. So 3.5 plus 4.5, my quick, very, very hardly college educated math tells me that is a total of an 8, a pretty damn good score.
I think, you know, for this being a book that I picked, I think you're actually giving it a higher score than I will, but only slightly. For the art, I'm going to give it a solid 4. It really... It makes itself distinct from what I had expected from Green Lantern on screen, on paper, and in animation. It's original, but it felt incredibly fresh at the same time. And the way that they're able to scale...
What's funny is that I kind of had myself at a 4 going in. You know, I don't like to really grade till I'm done, but sometimes I have, like, I'll probably give it this. But I talked myself into a 4.5 through over the last hour and a half or so, because so many times I found myself saying, wow, the art, you know, the art here, the art there. And I really just realized how important the art, how integral the art was, not just to the art, but to the actual story and to the writing itself. So that's what ended up, I think, bumping my grade up.
I can't tell you that volume 2 of this, it's the same creative team, but you could tell the artist had some time to practice and stuff, because it's actually better. If you thought, it is actually, like, I was really impressed. But I'm going to give it a 4. Really good, really fresh, clean cut. Manages to make this feel like a brand new world that you look at it and it's like you're seeing certain things for the first time again. We're nerds, we're geeks, we've seen space fights and aliens, but they managed to actually make it feel incredibly fresh and new. The story, I'm going to give the story a 3.5 for three reasons. One, pacing, as we mentioned. Two, I don't really get why they were able to create so many montage sequences throughout the pages that made the pacing kind of strange. And I think that cut out a lot of story progression. And three, and this is more of like a very personal thing, I'm really nitpicking. What I like about fiction is that fiction is the way in which we can go ahead and ultimately assess our world through the lens of the fantastic. And what I will say I like about the Green Lantern mythos traditionally is that they have these giant fantastical supernatural technologies and tools and magic and everything that highlight the inner workings of people. Who are those with the best will among us, the most courage, the bravery, that type of stuff. And what it does is it allows people to highlight that in a way. Whereas of this, it's, as I mentioned, it's less the sword and the stone was just waiting for Arthur to come, and it's more Frodo happens to get the ring. So it's also kind of a preference on that. What this shows is that Hal has a challenge and he has to choose to be a hero instead of just being summoned to be a hero. He has to choose it here. And through being a slave and through all the long journeys of Kilowog, you see that he really does do, especially when he's able to bring the Green Lantern Corps together. And when he chooses not to be the leader of the Corps and he has Orisa become the leader of the Corps. So it's still good in a way, but I think that's one of those elements that takes away some of that childlike charm away from it, which I think this book really tries to do, because it tries to make it feel very gritty. It's almost like if Christopher Nolan produced Green Lantern, this is kind of what I'm expecting. So I'm going to go ahead and give it a 3.5. And to be consistent with past episodes, two of my big factors I look at is this good for new readers who have no knowledge of it, and is it good for older readers that have an understanding of it? And I think it gets good marks on both. It's just the pacing and some of the story elements that I think are only hampered because this is a single self-contained original story. So I'm giving the story portion of it a 3.5, so that way it's getting a 7.5 from me.
Pretty darn close. I just went a little higher on the art because it just blew
it's
me
breathtaking
away.
Like, really, it really is.
So what held you back?
I don't like the okay I can tell you why
tell me that's why we're here
I don't like the faces.
Okay, well, that's worthy of a half a point deduction.
I think some of the character renderings are pretty nice throughout. I love the battles, but it's when you get to see the faces of characters, it's almost like they change page to page. Like, the expressions kind of do it, but it's almost like you can almost, like, if you don't pay attention enough, it's almost like you could forget which character you're looking at unless you've gone accustomed. Like, Hal is the only human. Then you've got Octopus Lady. Then you got Kilowog. Like, they all look kind of different at certain points. And that's what bugged me. That's what was keeping me from giving it a 5. I can't say, though, that for Volume 2 of Green Lantern Earth 1, that changes. Because I personally think it gets better. So, like, teaser, if we do it again, I'm giving Volume 2 a 5. But this one, it's a 4.
We got a pre-grade if we ever do the next one. All right, fair enough. Well, I look forward to checking out Volume 2 because I'm definitely wanting to after reading this one.
So are you sold on Earth 1 as a premise now? Because I know you own a couple copies. You just never cracked one open before this.
Yeah, I really got to read this Batman that I bought a few years ago and just never read for some reason. So, yeah, I liked it. I mean, yeah, all I can say is I like this story. So we'll see how I feel about other stories. But, yeah, I don't know why. Again, I don't know why I'm much more open to this Earth 1. I think it just comes down to the self-contained that they feel so much more accessible to me. That's always been my thing. Like, does this feel accessible to me or is it going to feel overwhelming to me? Where, like, to me, it doesn't feel like that crazy to read Green Lantern Earth 1, Volume 1 and 2, Batman Earth 1, Volume, I don't know if there's two or three volumes,
there's
whatever
two.
It may be. Okay, each hero, we're maybe talking two or three volumes max. I could bang those all out in a couple of weeks, where if I want to dive into the Ultimate Universe, like, there's a lot there. Whereas I could have the entire Earth 1 universe done and basically completed in just a small amount of time. So it's not as sort of intimidating to me to dive into. And it doesn't even feel like I need to dive into. Maybe you don't need to read a bunch of different books for the Ultimate Universe. But, you know, reading that Ultimate Spider-Man story, it was good and I enjoyed it as an introduction, but it felt like there were so many seeds planted there, like, that I really had to keep going to find out where everything was going. Whereas here, even though I want to continue and I plan to read more, I could stop here and feel like I read a complete story or feel like I watched a whole movie and I'm satisfied. I think I need to go get more to feel satisfied with this particular book, even if it does do the task of making me want more. Whereas with the Ultimate stuff, they all have such lores that kind of stems out from each one. And I know the whole universe ends with Jonathan Hickman's Secret Wars anyway, that it almost feels like, why bother diving into all this unless Remzo makes me read some of it? So that's where I'm
really hoping. I don't know if you knew this, but HBO Max is coming out with a original Green Lantern series that will be coming out.
I am aware of this, and yes. And that's unrelated to anything else we've seen. Just like it's the extended universe.
Yeah, thing. And it's going to have, I think it's going to have Jon Stewart, Kyle Rayner, and Guy Gardner, so they're not going to have Hal Jordan.
I think I heard there was a Jessica,
Jessica Cruz. Yeah. Jessica Cruz is really cool. She's a recent character that came out in New 52. She's really cool. I'm a Jessica Cruz fan.
Yeah, I am too. I just from what I've seen of her through Jeff Johns Justice League, I think is most of my exposure to her. I think that's where we saw the origin of that character. And yeah, that's just like another example of how, for whatever reason, DC is able to keep all these various lanterns. I mean, you'd think it would get really old, like, another lantern, and it might, like, on the surface, but when you actually dive into any of the lanterns or any of the characters, like, they all keep them very unique and, you know, very, very much their own characters, not just, like, I'm the next Green
Lantern. Yeah, and I just want to bring this up. The show will go for, like, an extra 2 minutes because I really want to get your thoughts on this. I think we've said it repeatedly. Hal Jordan is, I don't know what it is about Hal Jordan. I liked the story. I thought he was good in this, but one, like we mentioned, they could have just named him something else, maybe an entirely new character. And as I'm thinking of what I want from this HBO Max Green Lantern show, it does not bother me at all that we're not going to have Hal Jordan. I don't know why, but just him alone in regular DC canon, I don't know why. I feel like I should like him more, and especially this. But this is such a different version of what we're seeing. Like, literally, I almost feel like for the sake of Earth 1, it should have just been an entirely different person.
Yeah, I think for me, it's more my relationship with Hal Jordan is just, to me, the character has always seemed like a disaster, at least until Jeff Johns kind of did the rebirth, not the 2016 rebirth, but the Hal Jordan rebirth or the Green Lantern rebirth. I think it was maybe 2008, somewhere around there, just like he did with the Flash, and he really revitalized Hal Jordan. But before that, for me, Hal Jordan was just this, like, mess of a character who used to be a Green Lantern, then became Parallax, then became something else. I think he became the Spectre at one point. He was just this strange character to me. He was never the Green Lantern of old. So I guess I never had a connection to this character as a hero. I still really don't. I mean, it's really just stems from a lot of the more modern Jeff Johns stuff I've read, but I have no, you know, know, no childhood nostalgic connection to Hal Jordan being Green Lantern at all. If I have more of a connection to like to Guy Gardner and Kyle Rayner. I mean, those were the Green Lanterns when I grew up. Those are the guys I thought were cool. Whereas Hal Jordan was off being Parallax and doing weird time crisis.
Yeah,
things.
And I mean, I really can't name it. Like, I like every other Green Lantern, even like Simon Baz and Alan Scott. Like, I like everyone more than Hal Jordan. I don't hate Hal Jordan. Like, I hate some characters, but like for some weird reason, it's like I just can't put my finger on it. He fails to be interesting. And even when you want to change him for a new universe, they had to change literally everything about him except his name.
Yep.
It's just weird. But yeah, those are my thoughts.
So this might be actually my favorite Hal Jordan story. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, it is mine. I don't own it. I own some graphic novels, like from the main stuff, but it's more like because I like some of the characters that make cameos in there, not because, oh, I really wanted this. Because other than this, this is the, like, I don't really even own any Green Lantern comic books. This is really the only one I've ever liked.
Yeah, I mean, I have liked a lot of what I've seen from Geoff Johns stories with Hal Jordan, since that rebirth. But it has that feeling to me of like, man, I'm missing a lot because there's just so much. He's built out so much lore from it, and he draws so much on the mythological past of the Green Lanterns and the Guardians, and it feels overwhelming. Whereas this story felt very simple, very straightforward. Maybe you could argue it's not even really a Hal Jordan story, but it's probably one of my favorite Hal Jordan stories.
Yeah, definitely. Well, Mark, that's all I got.
That's all I got too. So what now?
Let's.
I guess we end.
Oh, okay. Well, anyway, folks, we got that giveaway we mentioned. We've got so much more. Support us. Let us give you the gift of entertainment and nerdly insights galore at patreon.com/secondprintpod. And if you want cosplay pics, you want fan films, you want reviews, you want insights from the nerd community across this great, fantastic world we live in, secondprintcomics.com, baby. That's all I got. I am Remso W. Martinez.
I am the marvelous Mark Clare.
Read comics, change the world. Good night, America.
Adios.